Hello, this is your voluntary broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan, bringing you the August 11th edition of The New Yorker magazine. Today's main story is How to Live Forever and Get Rich Doing It by Tad Friend. Brave New World Department, How to Live Forever and Get Rich Doing It. As researchers work to make death optional, investors see a chance for huge returns. But has the human body already reached its limits? By Tad Friend. Peter Diamandis is 5'4" and has pipe stem legs, but his torso widens into broad shoulders, powerful biceps, and has a craggy, Homeric head. The composite effect is of a genie emerging from a lamp. Our wish is his command, and our wish surely must be for more time to make wishes for a limitless life. In December, Diamandis stood before 200 doctors and scientists and vowed in the coming decade our wish would begin to come true. It's either a hardware problem or a software problem, and we're going to be able to fix that. Diamandis was at the Buck Institute for Research on Aging, north of San Francisco, to address the roundtable of longevity clinics. He wore his customary outfit, black sneakers, black jeans, and a black t-shirt. Having one look and one message, life just gets more abundant, spares him decision fatigue. An ebullient spirit whose confidence is tempered, at times, by his reverence for data, he acknowledged that the task was immense. We have 40 trillion cells in our body, and every cell is running 1 to 2 billion chemical reactions per second, he said. It's not possible for any human to understand this. We are linear thinkers in an exponential world. Yet with robots soon able to run a million experiments a day, and with AI posed to parse our cellular code, how long could immortality take? He observed that his clients at Fountain Life, a longevity clinic he established, were already on their way to freedom from disease. They'd have early access to emergent tech, such as a blood filter that can filter out metastatic cancer and a transmitter that uses high-frequency waves to diagnose strokes and zapped depression. Remission in a week with 10 minutes per day therapy. Diamandis, who is 64, has a bachelor's in molecular genetics and a master's in aerospace engineering from MIT, and as well as a medical degree from Harvard. But he's not a practicing doctor, engineer, or scientist. He's an emissary from the realms of possibility. After growing up on Long Island in a family of Greek immigrants, he began making his dent in the universe by founding some 24 businesses, many of which involved voyaging to space. As a young entrepreneur, he formulated Peter's laws, which included, if you can't win, change the rules, and when forced to compromise, ask for more. He promotes the inevitability of longevity through a multitude of channels. There's the clinic, which he started with two doctors and the motivational speaker Tony Robbins. There's the newsletter, two podcasts, and books on the future and how to stick around for it. There are partnerships and venture funds devoted to AI and biotech, an annual conference, Abundance 360, which showcases advances in nanotechnology and brain-computer interfaces, and a semi-annual platinum trip, where for $70,000 apiece, people get to meet eminent longevity scientists, invest in their experimental therapies, and secure those therapies for personal use. Diamandis's network, known to its constituents as the Peterverse, is largely peopled by slim, graying, well-off men who finger their aura rings like horcruxes. America's richest now live a dozen years longer than its poorest, and they intend to widen their lead. Jeff Bezos, Yuri Milner, and Sam Altman all have funded anti-aging research. John Huizenga, the CEO of Eugenicol, a startup whose water-based drink aims to reverse cellular age, told me, "We don't work in mice, we work in billionaires." Near the back of the buck sat the biological theorist Aubrey de Grey, stroking a beard the size of a beagle. In 2004, de Grey coined the phrase longevity escape velocity to describe the moment when science stops us from getting older, so that with future advances we begin getting younger. At the time, de Grey was viewed as a brilliant crackpot. He is now seen as a sort of Alfred Wegener, whose theory of continental drift lacked only a practical understanding of how it might work. The rise in de Grey's reputation corresponds to Diamantis's long struggle to encourage longevity research by establishing a prize, his favorite promotional device. In 1996, Diamantis launched the XPRIZE, a $10 million award for advances in commercial spaceflight. 8 years later, a team funded by the Microsoft founder Paul Allen sent a manned rocket aloft and won. XPRIZE went on to establish lucrative awards in domains as diverse as carbon capture, deep ocean exploration, and literacy software for children. In 2007, de Grey suggested a longevity prize. Diamantis loved the idea. Ever since med school, when he learned that Greenland sharks live for 5 centuries, he wondered, why not us? But impediments loomed. There was no agreed-upon framework for interventions. Aging isn't even classified as a disease by the FDA. And there was no obvious way to measure competing therapies, short of running a protracted competition to see how long it took participants to die. Perhaps most important, none of more than 50 billionaires whom Diamantis approached to fund the prize seemed to believe you could turn back time. The field gradually caught up to him, though. Health became a competition, encouraged by the advent of watches that track your vital signs and biomarker-based clocks that measure your aging. Podcasters converted sad sack men into biohackers who juice themselves with everything from Ayurvedic herbs to electromagnetic frequency beds. Most biohackers are men for the same reason that most gambling addicts are men. In 2013, there were fewer than 100 longevity clinics around the globe. A decade later, there are more than 3,000. So at the Buck Institute, Diamantis declared that he'd finally been able to establish a prize in longevity. The goal was to devise a treatment by 2030 that made patients' muscles, brains, and immune systems 20 years younger. The winning team would get as much as $81 million. David Sinclair, a prominent geneticist whose lab recently reversed the effective age of cells in lab animals, told me that the prize had galvanized the field. It's helped change the focus from mouse studies to, let's do something in humans. It's our Wright brothers moment. Many of the clinicians I talked to seemed skeptical about hitting such a difficult target. At the round table, the CEO of the Buck, Dr. Eric Verdin, cited a recent paper in Nature Aging, which concluded that we're already bumping up against our biological ceiling. He warned about overpromising. I do worry for the credibility of our field. Diamantis was undeterrable. Peter's Law, number 22. The day before something is a breakthrough, it's a crazy idea. From the stage, he exhorted his colleagues to rise to his level of certainty. Mindset is very important, he said. Optimists live 15% longer than pessimists. Humans are the only animals known to be discontented with natural selection. Sure, it created us, but we have a few notes. For instance, diabetes was beneficial for our ancestors because eating fat and sugar shifted them into insulin resistance, helping them withstand cold and famines. Nowadays, chugging a big gulp is less evolutionarily shrewd. A feature has become a bug. For millennia, we've sought a mix for debility and death. Medea, of Greek myth, rejuvenated her lover's father by replacing his blood with plant extracts and foam from a sacrificed werewolf, or as another source has it, by boiling him in a golden cauldron. The first emperor of China, Qin Shi Huang, may well have died from mercury in an immortality potion concocted by his alchemists. Today's biohackers sometimes look to antiquity for inspiration. This usually involves hormesis, a mild ordeal such as exercise, fasting, or cold plunges that can shock cellular pathways into better health. The Carol, a resistance bike that promises the benefits of a full workout in minutes, spurs users to pedal all out for 20-second intervals by imagining they are being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. Neanderthal man didn't jog, the bike announces. It's unclear how Carol knows that, or why emulating Neanderthals would improve our longevity, as those who escaped the tigers typically died in their 30s. Most biohackers look to the future. The best known of them is Brian Johnson, who founded the payment platform Braintree. Once rich and chubby and depressed, Johnson is now, at 47, rich and ripped and determined to live forever. He spends $250,000 a year in that pursuit. His regime has included restricting calories to 1,977 a day, undergoing high-frequency stimulation of his abdomen to simulate the effect of 20,000 sit-ups, and stimulating his penis with shockwaves for some doubtless excellent reason. Johnson leads a movement called Don't Die, whose adherents hope that they, too, can reprogram their bodies and minds. Open-sourcing himself, he publishes his biomarkers online, everything from body mass index to a total duration of nighttime erections, 3 hours and 36 minutes at one recent climatometric. His habit of requiring employees to sign confidentially agreements and then gliding among them nearly nude has drawn some negative comments, as have his penile metrics. But Johnson told me it's a great way to grab people's attention. If you tell somebody to go to bed on time, they're like, whatever, he said. If you tell them that not getting good sleep is going to ruin their boners, what if they don't have nighttime erections? They're 70% more likely to die prematurely. It really is efficacious. No one wants to lose their nighttime erections. That's a masculine thing. Diamantis chooses his words carefully when he talks about Johnson. Brian has done more to popularize longevity than any single person, he told me. I kind of wish he hadn't gone down the erection pathway. When Johnson speaks to embody biological optimization, Diamantis seeks to articulate the case for its feasibility. His goal is to mobilize a consortium of entrepreneurs, scientists, and investors to help us double our lifespan and grow rich while we do it. For Diamantis, the first step to creating the future we want is to speak as if it's already here. He doesn't watch the news, which he calls the amygdala-stimulating dystopian from the clickbait media. He gathers data from conferences, scientific papers, and pitch decks. He checks his colleagues' claims, but he's a generous grader. When the noted artificial intelligence researcher Dario Amodei speculated that AI could double the human lifespan in 5 to 10 years, Diamantis immediately began touting the quote, the caveated forecast of some expert in AI, but not in medicine, as confirmation that enhanced longevity was close at hand. His promise is essentially a world in which you can blithely marry somebody at 40, someone 40 years younger than you, continue to have children even as your grandchildren are having children of their own, and keep your gaze trained on the furthest horizon, in which you can stick around to witness and even determine where humanity goes next. Joe Polish, a marketing guru who has worked with Diamantis, said, Peter has learned that a compelling offer is 10 times more powerful than a convincing argument. Now people just want to be part of his world and go wherever he's taking them. Thanks to such advances as antibiotics and better sanitation, our lifespans have roughly doubled since 1900. Back then, the leading causes of death were pneumonia, tuberculosis, and diarrhea. Now we die of the maladies of old age, heart disease, cancer, strokes, Alzheimer's. The downside is that we go lingeringly in ways that we and our children regret. The average American dies at 77 after 12 years of bad health. If you are old enough to buy a senior citizen ticket, you are likely to have a chronic disease, or perhaps two. While the most zealous biohackers seek eternal life, many of the clinicians who oversee their care hope instead to increase their health span, the years lived without illness. Traditional lifestyle therapies, such as Dr. Dean Ornish's popular approach, eat well, move more, stress less, love more, increase health spans. But attempts to target a specific aging dynamic with a specific molecule have mostly just increased scientific vexation. Dr. Jordan Schlein, who runs 5 longevity clinics, told me, "Everything you do to improve your health span can improve your lifespan. Everything you do to improve your lifespan is fucking bullshit." It once seemed that improving lifespan is nearly inevitable. Back in the 90s, a single gene mutation was found to double the longevity of the C. elegans worm, and the geroscientists Simon Melov and Gordon Lithgow made predictions on a bar napkin. Lithgow believed that in 5 years, mammalian lifespans could double. Melov, that they would more than double. Recalling the moment, Melov sighed and said, "The 5 to 10 year horizon for huge breakthroughs has never gotten any closer." Animal proxies turn out to be not all that proximate. Lab mice share 85% of our DNA, and they live only about 2 years, a useful period when you hope to quickly determine whether a given peptide might be the long-sought elixir. But mice don't have heart attacks or get Alzheimer's, and their muscles waste suddenly rather than gradually, as ours do. More than 80% of animal-tested therapeutics fail in people. Our bodies, technically speaking, are just really fucking complicated. The Bucks' Eric Verdon told me, "Peter Diamantis says we're thinking linearly in an exponential world, and we'll be able to solve all these problems. But the biological problems to solve all get exponentially harder as you go deeper. Even the indicators are baffling. Hearing loss has been linked to dementia, as has failing to floss. An impaired sense of smell is more strongly predictive of all-cause mortality than heart disease. And the mysteries do multiply the deeper you go. People who have 4 organs that are youthful for their age are much less likely to experience kidney disease or arthritis. Yet those with 7 youthful organs, which must be even better, right, have a greatly heightened risk of diabetes and Parkinson's. In trying to live longer, we're fighting our own imperfection. Every time a cell divides, a few thousand mistakes can be introduced into its DNA. We're also fighting the entropic forces, time, gravity, and oxygen, that ravage pretty much everything." The authors of a seminal paper in Cell distinguished 12 hallmarks of aging, such signs of impaired self-regulation as DNA instability, mitochondrial dysfunction, chronic inflammation, cellular senescence when burned out cells start oozing toxic sludge, and stem cell exhaustion. Though the authors noted that all 12 hallmarks are strongly related, they could not establish whether the indicators were diverse expressions of one fundamental process or whether they evolved independently. Every few years, a new approach promises to turn the switch. These have included taking supplements such as NAND Plus that help preserve genomic integrity, maintaining our telomeres, the protective caps on DNA strands which shrink as we age, perfusing our veins with young blood, and taking rapamycin, a drug derived from a bacterium discovered on Easter Island. Yet interventions that arrest one hallmark of aging often accelerate others. Rapamycin is popular with biohackers because it inhibits the senescent cells that cause inflammation, a condition so associated with aging that it's often called inflammaging. But having too few senescent cells is dangerous because senescent helps block tumors. Almost nothing the body does is always bad or always good. We walk a narrow footbridge between atrophy, cells failing to replicate properly, and cancer, cells replicating all too well. Caloric restriction, a natural alternative to rapamycin, shares some of its benefits, but it can also shrink muscle mass, lower your libido, and suppress neuronal function. Plus, you're hungry all the time. The body seems to require a Goldilocks solution for pretty much everything. And yet, to realize significant gains in longevity, we'll need to significantly disrupt our natural functions. If it can't kill you, it probably doesn't work, Matt Schultz, the CEO of Osoin, a biotech startup that's tackling age-related frailty, told me. That's maybe not the best way to put it, but you're perturbing a complex system, so you need to be really doing something. Diamandis rises each morning at 5:30 and assesses his overnight biometrics gathered by an Oura Ring, an Apple Watch, and a continuous glucose monitor. Then, as he meditates, he employs 3 red light therapy devices, one for healthy skin, one for lustrous hair, and one to kill oral bacteria. Along with a cachava shake, he consumes the first of 5 daily pill packs. This includes a GLP-1 agonist, a mitochondrial stimulant, a stress dampener, and a nootropic for cognitive enhancement. After using a toothpaste tailored to his oral microbiome, he begins his morning Zooms while pedaling a stationary bike. He also pumps iron and pins his daily protein intake at 150 grams, 1 gram for each pound he weighs. In February, he visited a Fountain Life clinic in Orlando to undergo his quarterly testing. He shuttled between private rooms where a video loop of Diamantis himself spoke reassuringly about any worrisome test results. Wouldn't you rather find out at the beginning when you can do something about it? And smaller chambers where technicians took blood and saliva and had him blow into a silver bag to test for intestinal bacterial overgrowth. AIDS kept offering him electrolyte-infused fizzy water. The clinic describes itself as like a country club for precision diagnostics. Annual membership is $21,500, plus around $5,000 for supplements and additional tests. This isn't bad as such plans go. The superhuman package at Extension Health costs 10 times as much, and superhumanity is not guaranteed. Aiming at early detection, Fountain Life runs an annual battery of tests your GP doesn't do, such as an AI-driven scan for soft areal plaque. Dr. Bill Kapp, the clinic's CEO, told me 70% of people who die of cancer die of a form that's not routinely tested for. Testing is followed by treatments, and then by quarterly follow-up testing. Kapp added, just with what we know today, you should be able to get to 95 healthy. The clinic has 5 branches and 2,600 patients. Most of them hope merely to be able to climb Mount Kilimanjaro in their 70s. For those with loftier dreams, there's Epic, an $85,000 program that includes an exercise coach and a nutritionist, stem cell re-education, and treatments such as therapeutic plasma exchange, in which plasma is filtered from your blood and replaced with albumin and antibodies from healthy donors. Diamantis has undergone 5 TPE treatments, each costing $10,000. Dr. Helen Messier, Fountain Life's chief medical officer, told me, I like to say about these men, they spent their health getting their wealth, and now they have to spend their wealth getting their health back. As Diamantis was shuttled through a scanner that measures bone density, he imagined a world in which every home has a biodata mining operation. My VC fund is investing in implantables and incitables, which will be dribbling data to your AI at all times, he said. We're going to have sensors in our toilets, sensors listening to your voices, the sound of your cough, recording how you're walking. This is the future, passive, non-intrusive, constant management, where your AI will say, uh-oh, we better test for this. Your AI is going to be the best physician in the world. He seemed eager for the day to arrive, having to spend 3 hours being poked and prodded and prevented from making phone calls rankled. Diamantis is an incorrigible multitasker. Stephen Kotler, his co-author on 3 books, described the experience of driving with him. You're moving at 75 miles per hour and he's texting and also talking on his phone, closing some deal. It's fucking terrifying. When Diamantis visits his mother Tula, she chides him to go sit in the sun for 10 minutes. After his blood draws, Diamantis rejuvenated with the power cocktail IV and chatted with his younger sister, Marcel Diamantis Stanamoto, a functional medicine doctor who consults on his care. A technician came in with a questionnaire, stress level on a scale of 1 to 10. I'd say 6 or 7. What is your HRV? Marcella interjected, referring to heart rate variability, or the minute differences in heartbeat rhythm. A low score can indicate stress. Diamantis checked on his phone. Last night it was a 20. A good number is 50 or 60, Marcella said. She turned to the technician. He's a 10 for stress. I'm an 8.5, Diamantis said, scrolling. Pete, listen to me, Marcella said, implored. You're chasing all this, chasing these markers of senescent cells. What you need is to chase stress. Breathing and being present, the family, that's what reduces stress. I just want you to take care of yourself, but... Arcata, he said, Greek for enough. Diamantis told me, my personal health is to some degree sacrificed to the mission. My Faustian gamble is that I will do whatever I can for my longevity within a time allotment that seems doable. He meets out his time in pricey snippets, charging $250,000 for a speech abroad, $100,000 for one on the East Coast, and $70,000 for a talk near his home in Santa Monica. I measure everything in how much time I'm away from my kids, he told me. His friends say that he began focusing on self-care after his marriage in 2005. He proposed to Kristen Hadelkek on a zero-gravity flight when they were in midair, like a Chagall painting, and particularly after the birth of their twins, Dax and Jet, in 2011. He told me, I want to see my great-great-grandkids and see the world through their eyes. A few years ago, Diamantis undertook a 3-day sequence of guided journeys on the psychedelic DMT, which he said led to a complete release of my fear of death. It dissolved my ego and connected me to the love in the universe, and I got a strong sense that when we die, we just return to that infinite intelligence. But he's in no rush to return to sender. There's so much fascinating stuff happening right now that if I didn't have a family, I would be in meetings and conferences every second, he told me. I could literally be on an airplane circling the globe nonstop. Growing up in Great Neck, Diamantis longed to achieve escape velocity, not just from Long Island, but from Earth itself. His father was an OBGYN and expected Peter to follow his path. Diamantis was more interested in Star Trek. From an early age, he said, he believed that everything we value on Earth is infinitely available in space, and we must make habitable and occupy as many niches in our star system as possible. Restless at Harvard Medical School, Diamantis summoned his courage and told his father he wanted to study aerospace engineering. He got a master's at MIT, finished medical school, barely. The dean offered him a degree if he promised not to practice, and looked around for a way to get to the moon. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, the New Yorker magazine, read by your volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan. NASA didn't seem viable. Diamantis reasoned that even if he was accepted, he'd likely end up a penguin, an astronaut who never flies. As a graduate student, he'd co-founded an international space university that convened students from around the world for 8 weeks to study the final frontier. Now he began to swarm the frontier from all sides. He designed a rotating bed that would forestall the health issues astronauts faced in low gravity, starting a rocket launching company, and founded Zero Gravity Corporation, which flies a 727 on a parabolic course that enables passengers to experience weightlessness. Then he read The Spirit of St. Louis, Charles Lindbergh's book about his flight to Paris, and was struck that the impetus for traversing the Atlantic was to win a prize. I was blown away by the leverage, he told me. Aviators had spent a total of $400,000 trying to win $25,000, and six of them died. Not long afterwards, he announced the XPRIZE for commercial spaceflight. Though Diamantis always aimed at the heavens, he kept getting knocked sideways by new ideas. In 2005, he was serving as a glorified travel agent for space tourists when he read another book that changed his life, Ray Kurzweil's The Singularity Is Near. Kurzweil, now the principal researcher and AI visionary at Google, is the leading biotech futurist. Decades ago, he predicted that aging would be dramatically slowed by 2029, the same year that computers would achieve consciousness. Personalized immune therapies and organ replacements would propel us nearly to longevity escape velocity. The rest would be done by nanbots, cell-sized paramedics that zip through our bloodstreams, repairing aging tissues and the ability to upload our emulated brains. After our intelligence merges with AI in the cloud, we will become mostly digital entities, a million times more intelligent than mere humans. This will happen in 2045, a moment called the singularity. Reading Kurzweil's predictions, Diamantis recalled, I thought, oh my God, I have to stop all this linear shit in the space business and focus on the content of this book. In 2008, he and Kurzweil founded Singularity University, a kind of week-long executive MBA on impending technologies. Its funders and supporters included Larry Page, Peter Thiel, and Elon Musk. Then, in a meeting with Kurzweil, Diamantis was rocked by another holy shit moment, he said. I realize that there's a tremendous amount of energy that hits the Earth from the sun, but that energy is not in a usable form. Technology can make it usable, make it abundant. When I started thinking about it, technology can make anything from scarcity to abundance, including time. Yet he continues to treat time as a dwindling resource. For someone who's intending to live forever, a colleague of his observed, Peter's patience is really short. If an enterprise seems broken, Diamantis' impulse is to not fix it, but to start a new one. In 2013, having grown frustrated with Singularity University, he started Abundance 360, a notably similar forum, so similar that Singularity was all but forced to buy A360 out. A friend of his, Eric Pollier, said anyone who's captivated by Peter's energy is going to be disappointed when he turns his attention to something new. Removing carbon, stopping wildfires, improving lifespans, building a next-gen financial system, they're all the most important thing. While Diamantis was in Orlando, he spent 2 days at the Lake Nona Impact Forum, an invitation-only gathering whose speakers included George W. Bush and Mark Cuban. Between events, Diamantis whirled around making and cementing connections. In the speaker's lounge, he sought out Jamie Justice, a biogerontologist he'd persuaded to run XPRIZE HealthSpan. She still sounded surprised that he'd talked her into it. I told Peter, getting a 10-year gain in one domain among muscles, cognition, or the immune system feels possible, But all three? That feels crazy. I had all these facts and figures about how you can only improve VO2 max and knee extension torque so much. Peter looked at my data and said, great, you've made your points. 10 years seems very doable, so let's go for 20. Diamantis laughed. 10 years wasn't a big enough challenge, he said. 20 felt audacious, but achievable. When Justice noted that she wouldn't have taken a job if the prize rewarded lifespan rather than health span, he acknowledged, companionably, that words such as rejuvenation and age reversal do tend to rile the scientific community. For Diamantis, the protocols of scientific caution and objectivity can seem as coercive as the hallmarks of aging. In the corridor, he hugged Hans Kirsted, the head of a biotech company called Immunis, whose latest product is an injection derived from embryonic stem cells. Efforts to rewind the aging clock often focus on stem cells, the undifferentiated cells that transform to make up our hearts, eyes, and bones. When we're young, stem cells make us resilient. A baby can regrow a severed fingertip. But this font of renewal dries up. An 80-year-old's bone marrow contains 200 times fewer stem cells than a newborn's. A range of novel treatments attempts to restore our plasticity. Some entail extracting stem cells from your belly fat and injecting them elsewhere. Many are restricted in the United States, and biohackers who've gone abroad to pursue therapies for facial rejuvenation or sexual functions sometimes suffer adverse reactions, including death. The latest promising idea is to revert normal cells to a state known as induced pluripotent stem cells. This process has made mice live 30% longer, but taking it too far produces teratomas, tumors filled with teeth and hair. Immunis seems to have discovered a workaround, an injection of 440 molecules secreted by embryonic stem cells. In a clinical trial, elderly people immobilized by arthritic knees, an impediment that hastens muscle wasting, experienced 6% growth in their leg muscles. Diamantis was enthusiastic about the injection, but hardly impartial. The treatment was about to be trialed on 200 Fountain Life patients, including him. Kirsted is a Fountain Life client and a member of the Abundance community. Diamantis's biotech venture fund invested in Immunis. He'd showcased the company on a platinum trip, and he'd put Kirsted on a panel he moderated at Lake Nona. Immunis is also competing for the X Prize. These kinds of contending interests typify the Peterverse and the world of longevity as a whole. The influencer who touts a new treatment often owns a stake in it or receives a reciprocal log roll from the company that makes it. Jamie Justice told me that Diamantis' conflicts posed an issue for the Healthspan's prize. Along with Immunis, the competing teams include a biotech company run by his best friend and several longevity clinics that felt slighted by Diamantis' claim that Fountain Life is superior to its peers. We had to legally remove Peter, Justice said. He has no say in the judging, and he has to add distance to his statements about Fountain Life. Diamantis spoke about this enforced separation as a mildly regrettable consequence of his ubiquity. I don't want my relationships, the way I surround the field, to put a cloud over the prize, he said. I used to receive a salary, $250,000, as executive chairman, and I donated it for the next 5 years to the prize itself, so now I'm an uncompensated chairman. In the hallway, Kirsted gave Diamantis an update on another of his companies, which makes multi-pathogen vaccines. I have a commercial approval in Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and South Africa this year, Kirsted said. What about the plan to merge it with the firm that Diamantis co-funded so the two could share a factory? Kirsted shrugged eloquently. Why does it take people so long to do shit? Diamantis said. The answer is, yes, now go. I'm the vice chairman of the board, and I'll be the loudest voice in favor of it. I'm a walking conflict of interest, but I announce them. At the end of the day, having these ideas succeed is much more important than who makes a little money on them. We walk around all day estimating the age of passerby by visual cues, wrinkles, hair loss, the inferred weight of sorrows. The eyeball test was long our best gauge, because biomarkers like blood pressure measure health but not aging. A 20-year-old and a 90-year-old could each register 110 over 70. Then, in 2011, a geneticist and biostatistician named Steve Horvath found a way to estimate a person's age using methylation patterns of the epigenome, the set of proteins and compounds that attach to your DNA and determine which of your genes gets expressed. During methylation, a methyl group in the epigenome turns genes off. It's unclear whether it causes aging, but it's strongly associated with an increase in inflammation, bad, and a decrease in making RNA and repairing DNA worse. A clock that tells you how old you are turned out not to be that useful. Most people already know how old they are. Subsequent generations of clocks, more helpfully, measure your biological age, allowing you to calculate both how much time you have left and whether you're doing better than your peers. Almost everyone I spoke to in my reporting casually mentioned that the test gave him the largest delta between his calendar age and his biological age. The biohacker Dave Asprey, who is 52, told me that the clock he's developing says he's actually 18. Brian Johnson is currently atop an online biohackers leaderboard, aging at 0.503 years per year, though thousands of people would love to displace him. Dan Sullivan, an 81-year-old previous leader, had fallen to 1,021st place. He predicted Brian Johnson will die of a heart attack in the middle of his 50th erection of the night. I met Steve Horvath at his lab in Torrance, California, so that we could have our blood assessed by two clocks developed in his lab. One was pheno age, derived from circulatory proteins. The other was a methylation test called Grim age. Horvath, a man of mournful good cheer, told me, "I renamed it after the Grim Reaper. You could also call it the instantaneous dropping dead probability clock." As a phlebotomist drew our blood, Horvath explained, methylation represses junk DNA that can wreak havoc. We need methylation. But you want youthful state methylation with peaks and valleys. In an older person, that methylation landscape is flat. A recent paper in Cell proposed that when cells are in need of repair, the molecules that call methylation help by placing them in survival mode, but then those molecules stay put, causing aging. It would be as if the body dropped cones around a pothole-ridden stretch of highway, then forgot to pick them up. The dream is to collect all the cones and drive a ribbon of new asphalt. When you reprogram the epigenome of mice, you increase their life expectancy. But again, mice. Horvath looked out the window. "I invented epigenetic clocks, but that's my claim to fame. But what I'd really like to be known for is a great intervention, something that moves the clocks backwards. I've hated biology all my life. You go from one species to the next, and the opposite happens. The human plasma protein clock doesn't work in the mouse." For a time, Diamandis planned to use Horvath's clock as the XPRIZE's criterion. But he and his colleagues realized that the real index of rejuvenation was function. Can patients be restored enough to do youthful things? Function is somewhat theoretical in middle age, when almost everyone can get out of a chair and walk across a room. But after that, it becomes starkly tangible. In a study of men aged 85 and older, only a quarter of the slowest walkers survived 5 years, while nearly all of the fastest walkers did. Among the elderly, having difficulty bathing is as grisly determinative of mortality as having heart failure. For the XPRIZE, the protocol will be a single-year trial of healthy people aged 50 to 80 to determine whether therapy can improve their functional benchmarks by 20 years or more. The tests for strength currently include VO2 max, lower body power, and muscle mass. Those for cognition include appraisals of executive function, processing speed, and memory. The tests for immune function, which is harder to measure, will likely involve a blood-based biomarker. A month after my blood draw, I Zoomed with Horvath and his colleague, Bobby Brook, to discuss the results. My grim age was 61.2, slightly below my actual age. "You're doing better than 60% of the population," Brook said. Horvath shrugged. "One way to summarize that, when it comes to methylation, is that you're a very, very average person." "But I am cheating death by a tiny amount," I protested. "You can be proud, I guess," Horvath said. "But can I inspire you to become a little more ambitious?" He shared his screen. His pheno age was 42.7, more than 14 years lower than his age. "I was average when I started, like you," he said. "I got a scare about atherosclerosis, and I got serious about improving my lifestyle. I exercise 30 minutes a day, not too much. I doubled the statins to address cholesterol, and I take ascorbose to address my glucose. I take omega-3s. We just did a nice study on its benefits. In short, I take drugs. The one thing I couldn't influence is stress. I don't know how to tackle that." "You need a meditation app," Brooks said. "My reading of the meditation studies is that they were all disappointing," Horvath said. "More vegetables, that's the real secret. I'm a very lazy guy, so I go to the supermarket and I buy 5 bags of frozen Brussels sprouts. Few people eat more Brussels sprouts than me." Biohackers hear lots of conflicting advice about where to focus their energies. Luigi Ferrucci, the scientific director of the National Institute on Aging, suggests that the key to is the mitochondria, the battery of the cells. Tony Weiss-Corre, a leading neuroscientist, says that the brain is the biggest predictor of mortality. Dr. Peter Attia, who wrote the midlife health primer, Outlive, believes that strong muscles are vital. They prevent falls, keep the body from accumulating fat, and even protect against dementia. Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche, a teacher of Tibetan Buddhism, suggests a different course of action. Not paying for a gym membership, not struggling to eat the right things, not trying to love someone who I have a difficult relationship. There's only one necessity, he says. I have to try to get 8 hours of sleep. Scientists often overlook an organ that has an outsized influence on half the population, the ovaries. Chiefly owing to the ovaries, which age about 2.5 times faster than women's other organs, men and women decline so differently that they might almost be separate species. Men die of more heart attacks, women of Alzheimer's. Women live 7 years longer as a global average, and their immune systems endure better, but they spend a much greater proportion of their lives in poor health. Women benefit more from exercise because they burn lipids, a more efficient energy source than the carbs that men burn. Yet intermittent fasting can upset the menstrual balance, and women lose muscle mass from caloric restriction more rapidly than men. So no therapy will work equally well or even in the same manner for both sexes. Because so few scientists are focused on female longevity, XPRIZE is trying to establish a prize for ovarian health. The encompassing issue is that we're all fighting natural selection, whose sole criterion is the genes we pass on. The theory of disposable soma holds that once we've reproduced our body, our soma is no longer useful. A corollary with the ungainly name of antagonistic pleiotropy holds that many of the factors that help us to produce and raise children later curtail our lives. Cholesterol builds your brain and your gonads when you're young, and it clogs your brain and your heart when you're old, near Barzelia, a leading geroscientist told me. IGF-1 growth hormone is helpful if you're younger than 50 because it promotes muscle growth. That same high level in an older person kills you. Metformin, a diabetes drug biohackers take because some studies show it decreases mortality, reduces IGF-1, reduces the testosterone we need to build muscle. So if you're under 50 and you're taking it, that's an idiotic decision. After several million years of evolution and 2 centuries of medical advice, human life spans may already be highly optimized. Whereas most mammals have roughly the same number of lifetime heartbeats, 1.5 billion, humans have about 2.5 billion. Broadly speaking, if you have a finite number of heartbeats, then the faster you live, the faster you die. We're all being cooked over time, Dr. Ronald DeFino, who has done promising work to strengthen telomeres, told me. If you want to increase longevity, you basically have to turn the oven down. An unhealthy person who starts eating Brussels sprouts and going to Planet Fitness can really turn the oven down, but most of us can't be bothered. As David Asprey told me, if you live 20 years longer, if you would live 20 years longer, if you punched yourself in the face as hard as you could 3 times every morning, no one would do it. Many people aren't even willing to undergo much milder distress. In one study, most respondents said they wouldn't be interested in a drug that made them 2 years younger if it had side effects such as occasional headaches and loose stool. Biohackers would take the drug, and maybe even the punches, but their ovens are already set low. Dr. Andrea Mayer, who runs clinics in Singapore, told me, "Most of the time I'm being forced to optimize the most optimized people. What we do in longevity clinics is polish diamonds." According to Dr. Michael Roizen of the Cleveland Clinic, you can make a 32-year-old difference in your lifespan by implementing the no-brainer stuff, sleep, diet, exercise, etc., but you can gain only 4 years by taking supplements. Nonetheless, biohackers regularly tweak their stack of drugs and supplements, seeking minute advantages. The hope of combinatrix is the interventions enhance one another. In biology, you have to do work in combinations. Dr. Joseph Raphael, who runs a longevity clinic in Manhattan, told me, "If I give you urolithin A and a spermidine and a hormone and a nitric acid product and your autophagy house cleaning of damaged cells is increasing, it's like a great recipe. I may not know exactly what's contributing what, but overall it tastes good." Nathan Price, a co-director of the Center for Human Health Span at the Buck Institute, works with digital twins, virtual clones of a patient that are being developed to test treatments. "Very often, multiple interventions have synergistic effects," Price said. "Almost no one gets a benefit in staving off Alzheimer's from vitamin D, but people could get multiple years of benefit if they coupled vitamin D with phosphatidylchlorine and better sleep and Viagra for increased blood flow. Yet combinatorics often backfire. When young subjects took vitamin C and E before strength training, it blunted many benefits of working out. There's a pharmacological principle that when you combine 3 drugs, you have no idea how they're going to interact, as well as a hepatic principle that the more supplements you take, the more work your liver must do to detoxify them. Many over-the-counter supplements are contaminated with fungus, mold, yeast, salmonella, and heavy metals. When I mentioned the issues with combinatrix to Diamantis, he said, "It's a very valid critique that I've also heard from my mom." He added, "I'd love to start an AI company where you'd tell it what you want from your stack, more energy or nootropics or whatever, and then give it your genetic data and your medical baseline and the number of pills you're willing to swallow, and it tells you exactly what to take. In the interim," he said, opening a pouch containing his midday pills, "I'm manually doing this." He recently reduced his daily load of supplements from 74 to 52 to spare his kidneys, but he's still taking more than any other patient that his Fountain of Life doctor sees. Diamantis is following the evidence that we can, in fact, override our genetics. Numerous papers have concluded that genes determine only 7 to 30% of longevity, while behavioral choices play a much larger role. Your health, in this view, is not just an opportunity, but a responsibility. If you get cancer and die young, it's your fault for not perfecting your stack. One can imagine a future in which, if you didn't take every conceivable step to optimize your health, you'd face not only disapproval from your AI doctor, but denial of claims from your AI insurance company. For 4 days in March, Diamantis held his Abundance 360 conference at a resort in Rancho Palo Verde, California. He began the final day by jogging on stage in gold sneakers to the strains of Forever Young and declaring it was Longevity Day, the day that all will add decades of health and centuries of inspiration to your lives. And that's all we have time for today. By Tad Friend. Tad Friend has been a staff writer at The New Yorker since 1998. He is the author of the memoir, In the Early Times, A Life Reframed. We are at the conclusion of this week's The New Yorker Magazine program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan. Thank you for tuning in this week, and I invite you to join me next week for another new edition of The New Yorker Magazine. Have a great week and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.